The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. For all your steel needs, call their friendly experts.
This week we're looking at hydrogen power. The answer to ever-increasing fuel costs? Is it viable for agricultural machinery? Will it answer environmental concerns aimed at diesel?
It's a clean fuel when it's used, generally very clean, but the creation of it has to be done in the right way.
Open Farm Sunday is only a few weeks away. Why should you take part?
Farmers are very proud of what they do, and rightly so. So it's a great opportunity to talk about that.
And how are the crops and markets doing? We'll report, along with some timely agronomy advice from independent agronomist Sean Sparling. And we'll take a look ahead to Beef Expo 2024, taking place next weekend.
The Week in Agriculture. This is The Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
Hello, another busy week and another busy farming programme. This is the Farming Programme podcast for 21st of April 2024. I'm Steve Orchard. In the news this week, it might seem a little ironic, given all the times we've talked about flooded farms and the lack of help on the programme recently, but now you can apply for large grants to help improve water bodies, rivers and lakes. DEFRA's Water Restoration Fund has capacity building grants available, ranging from £75,000 to £250,000, or delivery grants from £0.5 to £2 million. These are funded from water company fines, not the agricultural budget, including those from Anglian, South West, Thames and Yorkshire Water and United Utilities. The deadline for submitting an application is June the 7th, and there's all you need to know on the DEFRA website. There's also another round of dairy grants for innovation, research and development coming up from the Digital Dairy Chain. They'll launch the second round of their collaborative research and development funding competition on May the 6th. Details from Innovate UK. Meat and dairy prices are still higher in the long term despite falling food inflation, which fell to 4% last month from 5% in February. And a DEFRA census is showing a significant drop in the UK sheep population, having dropped 5% year on year to 21.2 million head. The latest data shows the lowest number of breeding females on record, and reduced lamb production is expected this year as a result. Government and shadow ministers, supermarket procurement directors, cattle breeders and farmers will be descending on Cumbria next Saturday. Why? It's Beef Expo 2024, and with us this morning is National Beef Association Chief Exec Neil Shand. What's happening on Saturday then, Neil?
Well, we've got an exciting timetable of events, probably the most exciting seminar panels we've ever had. Starting with food, farming and finance, we've got Sir Mark Spencer, incumbent farming minister. We've got Daniel Zeichner, shadow farming minister, and we've got Tim Farron, MP, who's the Liberal Democrat spokesman for the environment. He's also a local MP, of course, which is also quite exciting. And we've also got Priest Morgan, livestock procurement director from Keepac, on that panel. So I think we've got a real good bunch of guys that are going to create a positive discussion. And a little change from normal. These seminars are basically Q&As. We're going to be encouraging questions from the floor. We don't want it to be presentations or, you know, political preaching from anyone on behalf of any party. We want it to be an opportunity for the industry to challenge the politicians how they're going to support the industry in the future.
I suppose an inevitability, Neil, isn't there? It's an election year that they're going to want to put across what their plans are. And I dare say you're going to want to hear what their plans are should they be elected.
Yes, and we'll try and, I mean, there's no doubt this will turn into mini Hurstons of that, I've got no doubt whatsoever. But, you know, our key messaging to the farming public that's coming to the event is pack your best and most difficult question, and we'll hope to be able to unleash it on the day. And then we've got feedback from one of the industry magazines on a state of the industry survey that they did. Very interesting team involved in that. And then we go into building bridges from farm gate to basket. We've got Steve McLean from M&S, Chris Brown from Asda, Joe Keating from a co-op, and Laurie Ibbotson from Dovecote Park. And one of my challenges for the chair of that seminar will be to bring retail and farming closer together and build bridges. You know, we both need each other. We need to move away from them and us and try and create partnerships to move forward. And then AHDB are on Sucklers Without Subsidy, and the challenges that will or could bring. And we've got a host of stuff going on in and around the event with breed societies. There'll be EID demonstration on ultra high frequency tags. That'll be running on round one throughout the day. There'll be the normal judging of the breed society stands, indoor trade stands, outdoor trade stands. As an organisation, we've done an agreement with Tipari Cattle Handling Systems, and we've got the beginning of what will be a extensive membership drive, but the prize is a £12,000 cattle crate. And I guess normally I would say we're hoping for a lovely day and lots of people, but I think the way the weather's been this winter, I probably need to say I'm hoping for a dreadful day so people come.
I think we've had enough dreadful days, to be perfectly honest, over the last few months generally, haven't we? Is there a theme to the expo, Neil? I mean, a lot of it talks about the future. Is that what you're looking at as the theme for the day?
Yeah, so we've not put a specific theme to this one. We put this plan in place, you know, the back end of 2022, always knowing this was probably going to be an election year. So a lot of it is evolving around, you know, support for the industry. You know, the political seminar is themed food, farming and finance. We have the challenges that we face across, you know, unseen borders in GB that is creating at the moment. And, you know, we have to be quite honest. Beef price has been pretty good for the last 4 years. There's been periods where inputs created by Ukraine have been challenging, but, you know, we're running well above the 5-year average for prices. I'm not saying we're content, but we're satisfied, which is probably a little bit less positive than just content. We always want to do better, but we want to see a collective between retailers and politicians giving the industry confidence to build for a stronger future. We are forever facing the challenges of environmentalists and all this. You know, we have environmental responsibilities and we will accept that, but we have to produce food alongside those challenges and make sure that both the environment and agriculture in rural communities survives.
Absolutely. You've got plenty going on the day, seminars, Q&A, as you say, exhibitors. And inevitably with these kind of events, there is a social element, isn't there? Get to see people you maybe don't get to see very often.
Well, one of our key sponsors, the Wagyu Breed Society, along with Warrendale Wagyu, are hosting a barbecue. There's always risk with putting this on the radio. Organising a barbecue that's free to attend on Friday night. So now it's on the radio. Huh? So we're very grateful to, you know, the Wagyu Breed Society and Warrendale for that. And that's something we tried at Darlington in 2022. Very successful. A thank you to all the exhibitors and stand holders that are attending the event and a get-together on the Friday night. And anyone in the local area is more than welcome to attend. That goes without saying.
Right, talking about local area then, we know this is Beef Expo 2024. It's in Cumbria. Tell us exactly when, where, and where we go for more information.
Right, so National Beef Association, we've got our own webpage, beefexpo.co.uk. All the information's there. Events being held at Northwest Auctions Junction 36 site, which is just off the M6, Junction 36, Saturday the 27th of April. Public will get in from 8 o'clock. The event officially starts at 9. I'm hoping Sarah Mark Spencer will say a few words just at 9 o'clock to officially open the gig. 9 till 5, all the facilities you need and lots of information, new technology, advances in beef production. A day not to be missed.
It'll be an excellent day by the sound of it. Neil, thank you so much for joining us on the Farming Programme this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you.
A few weeks to go, but it'll soon be here. Another Leaf Open Farm Sunday is open for business. It's a great opportunity to engage with the public, enhance the growing trust in farmers, and maybe dispel some of the negative myths around the industry. Regional Ambassador Andy Guy, good morning. What actually happens on the day from a farmer's point of view?
Well, I mean, Steve, from a farmer's point of view, it's a fantastic opportunity to connect up with your neighbours and the local community. Each farmer does it for a different reason, don't they? You know, for some, it's about doing something good for the industry and dispelling the myths, as you say, and, you know, advertising British farming. You know, it's backing British farming, isn't it? For others, it's about a much more local thing. It's about getting to know their neighbours, about helping people understand what they do on their farm. It's about, you know, sometimes it's a way to just explain why your tractor has to go down the road at 10 miles an hour or 20 miles an hour or 30 miles an hour and holds the traffic up, and you know, how we're looking after the countryside, what we're doing for the wildlife and that sort of thing. And every single event is different.
Yeah, one of the big concerns, big talking points, news points, is sustainability. It's the sort of buzzword an awful lot, and people do get concerned about how sustainable our farming industry is. But it is a big opportunity to be able to show what farmers are doing, not just sustainability of crops, but of nature generally, and what farmers do to enhance that.
That's right. I mean, British farmers are, you know, amongst the world leaders, really, I think, in the way that they custodian or look after the land, the way that they care for the land and produce crops. We're fantastic at producing a safe, productive, good value food, and doing it in a way that often enhances the environment around us. So putting right some of the wrongs of the past that have taken place. And farmers are very proud of what they do, and rightly so. So it's a great opportunity to talk about that.
And what does the public get out of it?
Well, it's a free event in most cases. There's a handful of farms that charge for some aspects of it to raise a little bit of money for charity, perhaps. But it's not about making profit. So it's a free day out, or an extremely cheap day out into the countryside. So a family event. So there's lots of opportunity for all ages to engage. It's the 9th of June, so the height of the summer. So we're hoping for sunshine. Can't always promise sunshine, but that's what we're hoping for. And, you know, a day in the countryside, a walk in the countryside, learn a little bit, see the wildlife and the young animals out on the farms, maybe see some of the technology and the, you know, the big machinery. It's an opportunity that a lot of people don't get to get really close up to that kit and sit in it and see how it's bristling with screens and electronics and things. It's a fascinating day out for all ages.
If somebody's new to this, I mean, lots of farmers will know about Open Farm Sunday, will have taken part in this in the past and know where to go and what to do. For a first timer or somebody considering it for the first time, what should they consider? What aspects of this do they need to think about? Does it have to be a big event with presentations, or can it just be a little walk around the farm?
It can be anything that they want it to be. So a lot of people talk to me about it and are concerned that you know, they don't want it to turn into a village show or a local ploughing match. It's, you know, that's a scary prospect for a first timer. But it absolutely doesn't have to be. We've got farms that open year on year on year that perhaps just invite 20 or 30 people for a walk around the farm. And then at the other end of the scale, there are people who run it as a huge operation with lots of volunteers and invite thousands of guests. And both are absolutely as valuable as each other. So I think for a first timer, the starting point is just to have a think about it with the family and perhaps the staff on the farm and their families, maybe see what you might be able to do. And then you can get in touch with me or with Leaf and have a chat and see, you know, what they need to be thinking about. But they've got to cover off things like health and safety. They've got to have a wet weather plan. They've got to work out what it is that their visitors are going to see and do, and register with Leaf Open Farm Sunday to start the process rolling.
And as you say, there's plenty of advice from Leaf. Are there any essentials that, whether you're looking at a big event or a little event, are there some essentials that you need to think about?
Well, number one essential is register your farm. That will trigger all sorts of information packs and invitations to webinars and things like that. And now's a good time to do that. You've got a couple of months to make all your plans then. Number two, I think, is think about car parking, think about health and safety, and think about activities. Folks aren't going to come out on farm and just entertain themselves. You've got to provide them with stuff, perhaps a farm walk or a tractor ride. It's got to be something to see. But there's stuff to see on every farm. I often hear from arable farmers who've just got crops growing on the farm. Oh, we've got nothing to show. We haven't got any lambs or any calves. But, you know, every single farm has got stuff to show, and things that farmers often take for granted are awe-inspiring for people who've never been on a farm before.
That's very true. I don't think people often understand or appreciate, for instance, a combine harvester or some of that kind of kit, just how enormous it is.
That's right.
And what it does. And it surprised me the first time I stepped inside one and drove it, in a way, how easy it is to drive. But, you know, there is an awful lot of technology in the farm, as you say, not just in certain sectors, but every farm's got some technology there, hasn't it?
That's right. Yeah. I mean, you know, every sector has its own aspects of technology, doesn't it? Whether it comes from electronic tagging on livestock through to combine harvesters and crop sprayers and, you know, self-steering tractors and all of that sort of stuff. And it's all available to see on Open Farm Sunday. So it's a great opportunity for the farmers to talk about what they do and to help their consumers. Ultimately, these people are our customers, aren't they? Help those people understand how it all works. And maybe we can inspire a few to go to agricultural college and join their fantastic industry.
Very true. Now, during COVID, we were insisting on booking systems for farm visits. Do you still reckon it's worthwhile putting a booking system in place?
Yeah, I mean, Leaf have a free booking system that you can use, so there's no cost involved. And it's a great way of judging how many people are going to come along to your day. So especially, I think, for those first timers, it's a really good way of building their confidence. You know, OK, we can cope with 200 people perhaps across the day. So, you know, you can set a limit on the number of tickets for your farm so that it can be sold out at 200 if that's what you want to do. So it's a really good way of judging how many people are going to come on the day. But it's not essential. If you just want to open the doors, that's fine too.
And does it have to be on the 9th of June? If a farmer's got something on that day that they can't shift, can they do it either side?
Yeah, that's absolutely fine. Every year we get a handful of farms who do it on a different day. Maybe there's a, I don't know, the church is having a fete that day, or there's a village show on that day and you don't want to clash. Or maybe you've got, you know, you've already got a commitment. You've got a wedding or a birthday or something like that. So it's fine to do it either side. But we really encourage people to try and do it on the 9th of June if they can, because that's where all of the national publicity goes towards. You know, that's the best if you can, but it's not essential.
OK. And finally, where are we going to go for more information? You talked about talking to you, talking to Leaf. We need to start thinking about this now. I know it's a couple of months away, but that will soon come round, and there's an awful lot else going on the farm. So where to go for more information? Who should we contact? Where do we find out what we need to find out?
So the starting place is probably the website, farmsunday.org. On there, there's a wealth of information about how to open your farm. My contact details are on there as well. My telephone number's there. I welcome calls and very happy to have a chat with people. I've been Open Farm Sunday ambassador for the region for many years now. So lots of experience that I can share with people about some of the pitfalls and things that they need to think about, and some of the highs as well. So I'm very happy to talk to them too.
Great. Farmsunday.org. Let's hope for a fantastic day or few days in June, 9th of June. All the information on the website. Andy Guy, thank you so much for joining us on the Farming Programme again.
Thank you, Steve.
Time to head to the field. Sean Sparling's with us now. Morning, Sean. Looking at the crops and with some important agronomy advice. You've taken part in Open Farm Sunday. It really is a great day out for the public, isn't it?
Yes, morning, Steve. And it's a great day out up there. Well worth a look if you haven't been. And even if you have as well, there's always plenty to do and see up there. Always great to learn more about this industry too. So fantastic day out. So as I said last week, and despite this return to cooler temperatures, some of these early sown crops of fast developing varieties like Skyfall and X-Taste are starting to get to growth stage 32 on their main stems, which is, of course, when you get to the T1 timing once leaf 3 emerges. Leaf 3 emerging on their main stems now. October drilled crops and the slower developing varieties just about have the very tip of final leaf 3 showing, and the January and February drilled bits are still tillering if they're lucky. So T1 timings are going to be all over the place, as we all know. So it's important to time that T1 accurately. We're trying to coat leaf 3 to stop septoria in particular from spreading upwards onto leaf 2 and then, God forbid, the flag leaf over the coming few weeks. And septoria triticae, very, very obvious out here. And it's going to be crucial to time that T1 as well as you possibly can, as it is every year, of course. Yellow rust, obvious in many crops of the more susceptible varieties too, particularly the later drilled or the stress crops. But probably the more difficult decision this season is not going to be what you use, but how much you spend on these poorer crops with the lower yield potential. But don't try and cut right back to a minimum just to fit a budget. That's where you need to speak to your agronomist. So plenty of yellow rust about in the usual suspects, Incitor, Gleam, Skyfall. Much worse, of course, where the T0 has either yet to go on, or it's been missed, or it's been scrapped altogether. Saki, Champion, Dorsum, Cranium, Typhoon, Mayflower, Redwold, X-Days, all inherently well rated against yellow rust. So while it's an annoyance and the cold, wet conditions so far this year have been so perfect for its development, the main issue at T1 will, as ever, be Septoria triticae. And that's not something you having to look for either out there. And if you get the control of that wrong, you can lose up to 50% of the yield just from that disease alone. So it's been pretty much a perfect storm, if you pardon the pun, for both yellow rust and Septoria triticae this year. There are, of course, some fantastic varieties in the ground this year with ratings for Septoria we couldn't even dream of as recently as only a couple of seasons ago. But there aren't many varieties out here that are truly resistant to Septoria triticae. X-Days, Typhoon, Champion, Mayflower, Theodore, very highly rated. But as with all of those resistance rating, there are caveats that come with them. And of course, as we've learned from previous seasons, the weather holds sway overall. Wet weather in March and April, windy weather spreading it about in the canopy like kids with nits as spring finally started to warm up, and those same winds compromising spraying and therefore compromising spraying timings, mild winters as well. So we've got tick, tick and another tick so far with everything to do with Septoria flourishing. Add to that so many of the broadacre varieties with disease ratings for Septoria triticae between 5 and 6.5, Skyscraper, Saki, Dorsum, Gleam, Skyfall, and with many people looking to cut back on these fungicides on the poorer bits that have lower potential, the overall disease pressure is going to go up, and therefore the potential threat from Septoria triticae this year, I think, is huge. And if you add into that, a lot of the winter wheat that we have was drilled from the middle to the end of September and the very early part of October. And you can reduce a varietal Septoria rating by about 0.6 for any variety that's drilled mid to late September. So all I'm saying is timing your T1 is perhaps even more important because of that this spring. And remember that despite all the hype, you don't have to spend an arm and a leg to get really good quality fungicide mixes. This is where a good agronomist comes in, one who's willing to spend time working out the mixes based upon active ingredient and getting the most bang for your buck, as it were. I've spent a lot of time on this, and trust me, there's some outstanding chemistry available to us out there. Very reasonably priced too, if you look for it, and especially if you start to think outside the box. It's about the value and the margin over the input cost, not necessarily the retail cost, and it should, as I've said, never be a case of going all or nothing on these wheats and barley. A poorer crop is just as much at risk from Septoria triticae as a good crop is. So talk it through with your advisor. It's always a good idea to have a plan in place before you start, I think. Growth regs also going to be vital this spring, particularly on the forward frothier bits where the lodging risk is high. Winter barley as well. So 3Cs and Trinexapac combinations, usually very effective. But always read the label and make sure that the timings are still safe regarding the growth stages of your crop. And of course, the main dose of nitrogen imminent too now. So it's all going to happen at once, isn't it? It was always going to be like that this season though. Sugar beet crops drilled in late March, early April, they took about 10, 12 days to come through the ground. And they're now sat at the cotyledon to expanded cotyledon growth stage. They're mostly sat in moisture, and the warmer temperatures last weekend, colder again now, of course, but those warmer temperatures mean that the crops and the weeds are going to be quite tender and lush over the next week or so. So that first post-emergent herbicide needs to be strong enough to control the early emerging weeds, polygonums in the main, without too much crop effect. And be particularly careful when you're adding adjuvants, mineral oils, vegetable oils and ethyfumosate to these early post-emergent herbicide mixtures in these conditions and while the sugar beet's so small. I mean, there was even a touch of frost into Thursday, so be aware of extremes of weather, extreme heat, extreme cold, heavy rain, that diurnal fluctuation in temperature, hail. We had a big hailstorm run through Lincoln on Monday morning. Now you go adding herbicides into that mix of de-waxing and stressing these little beet plants and you're soon staring down the barrel of crop damage, which is what you don't want. And on those non-cruiser dress fields of beet, constantly monitor for Mises persicae threshold, one wingless nymph per four plants. Really from the day they come through the ground, they're starting to catch winged aphids in the suction traps now, so do stay alert to that. The last dose of nitrogen as well, that wants to be on sugar beet before two leaves so that the prills don't stick in the heart and kill them that way. So once it's up in rows, get it on. Probably too late for drilling spring wheat now. Spring beans too, getting plenty late enough. But I did see a tired and scruffy looking swallow resting on the wires at Temple Brewer Monday afternoon, so I'm guessing he's wondering what's going on with the weather just as we are. But that's a great sign. If the Swallows are home, it can only get better now. You wait, I promise. And it'll not be long before somebody's wanting a drop of rain again. Not just yet, though, if you don't mind. Plenty still to do out here first. So let's see what the next 7 days bring.
Thanks as ever, Sean. In a moment, we'll see how the markets are doing and what the weather's going to do to us. And we're considering the pros and cons of hydrogen power for agricultural machinery.
The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, supplying the region for over 40 years.
This is the Farming Programme podcast. I'm Steve Orchard. So, hydrogen power then, a viable alternative to diesel for agricultural machinery or another fad? What are the pros and cons? If you've any thoughts or experience with such power, there is a DEFRA consultation open at the moment, which we mentioned last week on the Farming Programme and we'll talk about in a few minutes. Now, to find out more about hydrogen power, Ed Dennett, who's Marketing Manager at Fendt, is with us. Ed, morning. First, what's the upside of hydrogen power?
Well, I suppose essentially we're the real advantage with hydrogen over like a hydrocarbon fuel, maybe even an HVO, is just the reduction in emissions. So essentially, if you put hydrogen through a fuel cell, which is one way of using it to generate electricity, your only real output is H2O, water. And then if you were to burn it in a spark ignition engine, you will still get some emissions, if you like, but the emissions are far, far, far less than you would get through burning a hydrocarbon or even an HVO type fuel. So it's really that emissions side of things. Obviously, emissions are from agriculture across the board, whether it's livestock, machinery that's using stuff, fridges, refrigeration units on veg businesses, and so it's all under the radar, really, and what people are looking at. So
okay,
yeah.
So it's cleaner, more sustainable, would you say?
That is one of the challenges at the moment, to be honest with you, is generating hydrogen in a environmentally friendly way. I mean, we can make hydrogen. That's a relatively easy process, but at the moment you've got what you call blue hydrogen, so that's made using electricity or power that's generated by burning a fossil fuel. What we really need to try and crack is the creation of green hydrogen, which is effectively clean hydrogen that's been generated in a renewable way. So it's a clean fuel when it's used, generally very clean, but the creation of it has to be done in the right way.
Okay, I suppose you could use that argument with electric fuel, couldn't you, for vehicles?
Exactly.
You've still got to produce the electricity in some way.
I always say to people, when people say zero emissions, I always say it's zero emissions at point of use at the moment. And if you're charging your car or whatever it is using solar panels, you could argue that that's zero emissions. But if you're doing it off the grid, depends on the weather that day and what the power mix was and all the rest of it. So yeah,
I guess one of the downsides to using hydrogen is the availability on the general market of hydrogen. Can you actually get it easily enough?
There are different sources of it. I think we're some way off it being commercially available, like fuel, like diesel would be, if that makes sense. But I think a lot of it is down to government investment in the network. Obviously, there's quite a lot of investment going into electrical or electric hookups for cars and things like that at the moment. Whether that will happen in hydrogen is another matter. But yeah, I mean, that is the one thing, one of the things at the moment is just the availability of it.
I mean, that's been part of the distribution problem for electric, hasn't it? That lots of people are quite keen on electric vehicles and they certainly seem to be green. They're nice and quick. They do the job, blah, 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 blah. But the main problem with all this seems to be enough charging points.
Yeah, infrastructure. And I think, again, it depends a little bit on how people use their cars as well and where the infrastructure needs to be. You know, if you're doing a commute of 20 miles and you go backwards and forwards to work every day and that's all the journey you do, as long as there's an infrastructure at work, or maybe you don't even need that, you just need it at home, it's fine. If you want to go further afield, then you start to get problems. And it's a similar situation on farm as well. You know, historically, farms have had fuel stored on farm so that they haven't got to go anywhere to get it, if that makes sense. So there's a whole infrastructure set up to it as well as the actual design and incorporation of that technology in the machinery.
And of course, we have the big question, which comes with any new technology, is cost and its effectiveness.
Yeah.
You know, are the machines, are the tractors that run on hydrogen going to be much more expensive than diesel ones? That then balances out the cost, you know, the lower cost of hydrogen. Do we have any ideas yet how the effectiveness of cost is going to be for these?
Not from our point of view or from fence perspective at the moment. I mean, just to fill you in, I guess, on the picture with it, really, we sort of working in a, it's kind of like a three or not a three horse race, but we've kind of split our research in some ways. So we see battery electric being a viable solution up to about maybe 120, 130 horsepower. So that we would have seen with our E100 and to give you an operating range of anywhere from 4.5 to 8 hours, depending on load. And then there'll be various solutions available, like range extenders that we'd be able to mount on the front linkage with fuel cells or something like that, that would charge the battery on the go. Above that, to somewhere around 250 horsepower-ish, we sort of see a fuel cell working with hydrogen. And then above that, we're looking at HVOs, so renewable fuels like a diesel, but a renewable substitute in that bigger power bracket, just because of the energy density of the fuel that's required. Now, in terms of our hydrogen research we're doing at the moment, it's at a very early stage. There's no commercials available yet, so we wouldn't really be able to comment. But I mean, obviously, at a very high level, we have to make it affordable so people can still afford to purchase or invest in it, whilst making sure that we turn a profit to be able to keep investing. So it's a delicate balance, but I'm sure we'll find it.
So nothing's actually available on the market yet, but prototypes. I know there was one in Europe, wasn't there, you've launched.
So essentially, Fendt is actually part of a project called the H2 Agra project, which is taking place in Lower Saxony in Germany, which has got a number of manufacturers and universities on the continent working on it. And that's actually sort of brings us a bit full circle, really, because it talks about the infrastructure as well. So that's essentially to try generating hydrogen on site, on farm, in a renewable way. So you're getting this green hydrogen I was talking about, and then have the machinery available to use that hydrogen in a clean way. So we showed what we call our Fendt Helios prototype machine, if you like, was shown publicly for the first time last year. And then we showed it at a show, Agritechnica, in November last year. And we've delivered two prototype machines to the research facility, which are now in use, and the customers are using them. We're gaining information from those all the time. So they're actually based on our 714 Gen 6 tractor. So and they're working on a fuel cell arrangement, so not a spark ignition. It's actually a fuel cell type arrangement that we're using. So we're on the journey. We're on the journey. That's what I'd say.
But say early days yet. Now, this consultation closes 24th of April. So I guess really anybody's got an interest in this, farmers, operators, yourselves, needs to get their thoughts across to the government, because these things aren't allowed to be used yet, are they?
Oh, exactly. And I mean, I think, you know, it's something that we certainly have been doing. We've got different people who work in our organisation. But yeah, as I say, I think if you have any thoughts or ideas or anything like that, I think really get those into that consultation. Make sure that your voice is heard. That's what I'd say. So,
all right, Ed, thank you very much indeed for your time. Ed Dennett, Marketing Manager at Fendt, thanks for joining us on the Farming Programme this morning.
Brilliant. Thanks, Steve.
The Farming Programme.
Market reports.
Starting with livestock from Masons Rural at Louth auctioneer Ed Middleton. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Steve. This week we start away with the prime cattle. This week heifers average an all-in average of 266.87 pence per kilo, and the steers all-in average 258.42 pence per kilo. Top price in the heifers were J.C. Scurley of Bournemouth at £1,553.25. And in the pence per kilo were C.A. Mottram and Sons of Lincoln at 295.5 pence per kilo. In the steers, J.E. Thilby of Kexby topped at £1,584.10. And in the pence per kilo, J.N.S. Brooks of Strubby at 268.5 pence per kilo. Moving on to the cool cows, an excellent show and trade to match with the cool cows this week, with an all-in average of 181.64 pence. Top price in the cows this week was a tremendous 243.5 pence per kilo, equating to £1,748.85 from Stuart Renshaw of Tetford. Moving on to the sheep, a small show of prime lambs this week with an SQQ of 440.96 pence per kilo and an all-in average pounds per head of £191.33. Top price in the spring lambs were Shaw Brothers of Binbrook at £208. And topping the pence per kilo were NF and F Stones of Louth at 452 pence per kilo. Moving on to the hogs, this week we had an SQQ of 377.29 pence per kilo and an all-in average pounds per head of 181.24 pence. smallest show of hogs this week, and if not a little dearer. Top spot this week went to AJ Colson Sons of Market Raisin at £230. And in the pence per kilo were W. Taylor & Co. of Tetford at 426 pence per kilo. Moving on to the Cull Ewes, this week on an average of £136.12. A lift in trade from the previous week with a top price of £201 for S.E. Wells of Barnet Beeler Wold. A reminder, we're taking entries for our spring ewe and lamb show and sale, which is on Monday the 5th of May. Entries are taken on the day for that, so please get in touch if you have any ewes and lambs to sell. I'm Edward Middleton, auctioneer at Louth Livestock Market.
Thanks, Ed. And with a look at the grain markets, Open Fields' Alice Killam. Morning, Alice.
Good morning, Steve. In truth, there is not a great deal to report which has changed since last week, but we remain in positive territory just. To summarise where we are now, it does appear that the global market has found the bottom. We have seen the Russian wheat price rise, and everybody has taken advantage of this, moving up also. For the UK, this probably equates to circa £15 per tonne from 6 weeks ago. There is still a sizeable amount of produce still to shift though, and we remain close to the lows of 2020. International tenders are still being snapped up by the usual suspects. Indeed, Ukraine's exports remain exceptionally strong despite the issues at one of the Odessa terminals. In the first half of April, it is reported that they have shipped 2.4 million tonne of corn versus 2.8 million tonne in the whole of March. Perhaps something to keep an eye on, Russia export numbers were exactly the opposite to Ukraine. 0.7 metric tonne of wheat in the first 2 weeks of April compared to 2.3 million tonne in March. Some will suggest government intervention and a theory that they may be holding for now in an effort to see something better in the coming months. Though European funds have eradicated a large portion of their short positions, the US funds have certainly not. Most fund managers still have a very negative view on the market. They may be many things, but they are not fools. One of our main issues for the UK is the amount of product which is either coming into the UK or is a much cheaper alternative to what we would term our traditional export homes. This has not stopped, and it is likely in anticipation of a much lower UK crop next season that domestic homes are trying to bed in a system which accommodates imported product. This is certainly true of milling wheat. For old crop wheat, at the end of next week, we will see the first notice day of May futures, where the trade is expecting some large volumes of UK feed wheat held in futures stores to hit the market. As we've been discussing for some time, the carry from old crop to new crop is significant. There will be some who are able to carry wheat forward because of the smaller crop size, and naturally, there may well be some futures stores rolling from 1 year to the next two. Like farms, this will change on an individual store basis, but where someone is able to carry with good, dependable stores, then this will be a consideration. It seems farcical that having received the wettest winter on record, some of us now wouldn't mind a little rain. This may or may not be true depending on where in the UK you farm, but what the UK certainly does not want now is hot, dry weather for a sustained period of time. Crops, even good ones, would start to go backwards very quickly indeed. Some guide prices for this week, circa Friday morning. Feed wheat, May 170 to 180, November 190 to 200, with Group 1 milling premium still holding between £60 and £70. Feed barley, May 150 to 160, November 170 to 180, and all seed rape, May 355 to 365, and July 360 to 370. As usual, please call for firm values.
Thanks, Alice.
The Farming Programme. 5 day forecast.
High pressure brings a mostly calm, mostly very chilly week. You can expect some overnight frost with a bit of light rain Monday and Thursday. This is the Farming Programme podcast. Next week, we'll look at a new campaign focusing on reducing livestock worrying. And it's not long to the Nottinghamshire show. We'll see what's on. Plus the week's farming news on the Farming Programme on Hits Radio Lincolnshire and the app. All podcast platforms, online and smart speaker, say play the Farming Programme from Apple Podcasts. I'm Steve Orchard. Until then, have a great week.
The Farming Programme with Arroquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. BSI ISO 9001 accredited.